afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat. Just in case if we haven't met, I'd like to state my name at the beginning because we've got a lot of new users or new audience members are coming in. I thought to introduce myself. I take a habit of introducing myself at the beginning of each episode. Today, we are recording episode 126 on the channel, and I have the honor and distinct pleasure to be joined by E.A. Clark, a friend of mine, who is the founder of Pivot and Edge, a recruiting company based here in Canada. And I have the pleasure to have interviewed EA on a previous episode on the Localization Fireside Chat. And him and I were talking a few days ago, and we thought, wow, we got onto a topic that is very interesting. We thought, why don't we do another recording and tackle that topic together? I'm sure some of our audience would be interested in finding out, well, what are these two up to? So there you go. Welcome to the channel, EA.
Thanks, Robin. I appreciate the invite. Thank you.
Yeah. And EA, as usually we do this, if you don't mind, people have already know who you are because you've been on the podcast before. Just give us a brief description or brief story of who you are and what is Pivot and Edge for those who don't know you.
Sure. Thanks for that. So I started my operational career, obviously, a number of years ago, but focusing in the recruiting space, and then for corporate, big corporate organizations. I left the corporate environment into early stage startups, did a couple successful exits, and then got into executive headhunting, where I focused on early stage, high growth startup companies. But during that 23-year journey in executive search, I did think that the industry itself was somewhat broken. Didn't like the model. I thought executive search was too expensive. I didn't think it really truly understood the customer as well as it should. And so I founded a company called Pivot and Edge, which is, I describe it as a marketing first recruitment company. So Pivot and Edge takes the stories from its executives, the C-suite, and amplifies those stories on social platforms so that it can attract talent to the opportunity. If you think about it in this way, early stage or small growing companies, they simply don't have the brand that, you know, an IBM or a BMW has. And because they don't, the brand is really that C-suite. So in order to get people that are interested in what they're doing, what that company's doing, and to truly figure out the fit, and we'll get into our topic about that in a few minutes, Robin, because the fit is really kind of the crux of what I'd like to talk to you about today. But we try to focus on the fit. And so doing that, if we can tell that C-suite story, we can attract people that align with it. And if we can attract people that align with it, the chances are they will fit into that culture. So we built Pivot and Edge to do that. And so we arrive here today, and you and I were talking, as you mentioned the other day, you said, so how does this whole AI thing fit into recruiting these days? And so this is why we're here today, to talk a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. Thanks, EA, for the brief description. I really appreciate it. The question I guess I have for you is, at the beginning when you started Pivot and Edge, you saw a problem and you created a solution. And it sounds to me that the problem was centered around commoditization of recruiting, and you wanted to elevate that into a more specific way of really studying what are you going to do, who are you going to find, and what position are you trying to fill. Like, you're trying to put a lot more emphasis on the creating the right fit instead of just finding anybody and just putting them in there and hope for the best kind of thing. Is that what I'm hearing you say? Like, Pivot and Edge is a solution?
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. Particularly in the early stage company environments, I believe fits everything. You know, certainly when I was building organizations and part of growing companies, I often, you know, heard people say, you know, just give it to Robin and he'll figure it out, or just give it to EA and he'll figure it out. And I think that's kind of an example of, you don't necessarily have to hire someone who's got all the pieces, but if you hire someone that actually gets the culture, understands where you want to go from a vision, they'll apply the energy to the help you get there. And so I would almost argue that in this growth phase that many of our customers are in, fit and cultural connection and alignment's probably more critical than, you know, ticking all the boxes off in terms of all the requirements that are necessary.
Absolutely. To pivot a little bit on to the subject of AI, you and I've talked a little bit about this one. Why don't we, you know, get a warm intro into the topic by just, if you don't mind, from your side, what is the one myth about AI in recruiting that you would love to, you know, make sure that it's put to bed today?
Well, you know, I think what starts the whole ball rolling when it comes to AI is I think people look at it as a way of cost savings. You know, maybe if we use an AI tool here or a AI bot there, we can save money, save headcount. And I think that whole approach is absolutely wrong. If you're looking at ways to save money, I think the approach is just not the approach you need. The approach that you need is, would a tool like this bring more value to my customer? Would a tool like this streamline a process and speed up the hiring? And if you start to look at it from a value-added perspective, then I think, you know, AI becomes, you know, a tool in the toolkit. You know, Pivot and Edge has, I don't know, a dozen different pieces of software in our stack. And, you know, literally every quarter, we task someone in the company to look at another piece of software, see if it brings value to us. And if it brings value to us and our customer, then we incorporate it into the operational part of our process. I look at AI as a very similar to that. And I think if we look at it and we can determine that it, in fact, will bring value to our customers in certain ways, we will adopt it. But it's certainly not a save money first approach to it.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things, I mean, you hit a very important point is that there is a race. And you and I agree to that, right? So there's a race, you know, everybody's racing to that whole cost savings. And I think in the speed of cost savings, it's like a bull in a china shop. We're breaking a whole bunch of things on the way to cost savings. It's like we're driving a highway of, oh, I want to get to that destination. It's called the utopia of cost savings. And I'm going to employ or deploy AI in any way possible. And in the meantime, while I'm rushing, you know, breaking the speed limits on the highways of deploying things, there are many things are going bad in the process. And you bring a very valid point is, where is the value? Is it creating value to my internal team or my customers or the market that I'm serving? People ignore that. I feel it like, and even on the language side of things, not just in the recruiting side of things, people are like, just, yeah, you know what? The delta between the cost now and the cost after I deploy this thing is really huge. It's hard to ignore that. But for the sacrifice of that delta of cost savings, people are also sacrificing other things, value, quality, you know, the right fit in your environment. Which brings me to the next one. Like, where is it being used today, AI-wise, and it's in your world, and it's being used successfully? Can you say it's in sourcing, in screening, outreach, assessments? I'm sure there's a lot of a human interface with the technology, but where is AI being used successfully in your area?
So, you know, we see leaking into all aspects of recruiting, and you know, different organizations are using it in different ways. But if I take the Pivot and Edge perspective for just a minute, if you believe in our model, and you know, I like to use the term, you know, Pivot and Edge finds believers. So if you think that we can find your believer, the person that works in your organization that believes in your culture, believes in your vision, your values, and we do that through storytelling with the CEO or the C-suite, I can't imagine a president or a CEO of any customer of ours that would want a bot in between their story and a candidate. There's just no way that that bot can translate that story, that vision, that cultural fit as well. And so from our perspective, I'll take it from a Pivot and Edge. We have analyzed AI in a number of ways. Certainly in our operational process, we are beginning to use it today. Now, one of the ways we use it is that if you think about, we interview candidates for our customers and then pass strong candidates on to hiring managers. Now, the value of having that hiring manager take notes and provide notes back to us in a database helps us pinpoint and target the next series of candidates. So the more you tell me about the candidate you interviewed, good, bad, and ugly, the better off we can be at finding the next series of candidates for you. Now, our hiring managers are very busy. So sometimes they don't get around to putting those notes together, or those notes are very sketchy. So we're challenged with trying to get the information we need to proceed operationally to the next series of candidates. So we're beginning now to use AI to capture interview notes for our hiring managers. And then they take the notes, they take the summary of those notes, they draft them and approve them and put them in the database. Now that's becoming valuable to us. We'll continue to look for other ways for AI to bring value to us. We're looking at it in terms of helping us do our interviews as well. But at the current way we operate, just taking the notes that we need to in the interview process is more streamlined and more effective than it is using an AI tool to do that. But we'll continue to look at those things as the tools progress, get better. And, you know, the other aspect too, certainly in certain regions of Canada now, there will be government regulations that will actually force organizations to let the candidates know and the customers know that they're using AI tools in that hiring process. And that will all start to change the way people use them.
Why do you say that? Is it confidentiality? Is it other things? Why do you think people will be, assuming you're alluding to, they'll be a little bit apprehensive about it?
Well, I think there'll be an issue of transparency. So, you know, if there's an AI tool being used for screening or, you know, going over candidates' files, that's something that has to be transparent to the candidate. You have to let them know that. And I wonder if that's a good use of the tool to do that. I think we need to stay in touch with the candidate process, at least at that level. I look at AI as a tool to help, maybe, could I describe it like the administration support of our operation? But I don't see it, certainly I don't see it yet, anywhere getting involved into the candidate journey at all.
In the reasoning side. So you see it on the administrative side, you know, doing tasks that they're like dry cut tasks. But you don't see it in the reasoning side, you know, make decisions kind of area, right? Am I reading you correctly?
No, exactly. I just, certainly in Pivot and Edge, we will not be using it for that, certainly for the, you know, foreseeable future.
So I know you're in the business, you probably talk to your colleagues, your competitors, et cetera, out there, and you see like the landscape in the recruiting in Canada specifically. In your opinion, I know we've touched a little bit on it, but I want you a little bit more precise, like what others are doing that you think it's still a hype, and what does, in your opinion, looks promising but not ready yet for prime time when it comes to using technology such as AI in your space?
Well, there are recruiting organizations that are actually using bots to do the interviews.
Well, that's scary.
So you think? I think so. In fact, I don't think I'd work for a company that put a bot in front of this process. But
you know, from a candidate perspective, I see a business opportunity right now. I'll just create a bot for the candidate.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, there
you
go.
Do bot to bot. Yeah. Interviews.
Pick your avatar and off you go. I just don't see that as a tool. Now we are analyzing another AI tool. We just started looking at it the other day. It's a researching capability. So you basically take the tool, put in all the requirements and so on, and you know, all the issues that you need, and then you send it out to find candidates that match that process. So we tried that, and we put that tool up against our research team, and the tool came back with 10 candidates. The research team basically came back and said, there's only one in that list of 10 that we would ever look at. The other 9 are absolutely wrong. So, you know, there's a tool we're not going to use right now. I mean, it could get better, but our research team has the nuances of the job, understands the company, and can make judgment calls as to how much of that requirement is fine and how much of this requirement is an absolute. And these are the kind of nuances when you're doing research that's just not capable yet for these tools. So there's two examples. There will be others. And like I said, we We have an exhaustive software stack, and we'll continue to add to that. And AI will be a component of that over time, but we're continually testing, and not much of our process is AI supported at this point.
So it's like, I really admire the fact that you're deploying this in a logical sense. You're taking a logical approach to this. You're trying to figure out, where does it apply? Where can I use it and help improve what we do and what the candidate experience, what the customer experience on the other side, versus blindly, you know, anytime there's a new app out there, somebody goes and download it and add it to their stack, kind of thing, tech stack. And so while doing so, I'm assuming you are evaluating internally to your team, to the employees that work with you or your partners, how is that impacting them internally? We talk a lot about how does it impact the candidate, but is that making changes for you internally? Like, is the profile of your employees, potential employees down the road, is changing, or you just continue evolving with this? Are you tooling, reskilling, and retooling the employees that you currently have to accommodate for the new technologies?
Retooling the employees that we have. There is an element of the capability by which people use an AI tool. And I think people underestimate the complexity of that. I'll give you a great example. I tried using it to record my interview notes and to provide me an interview summary. Now, my interviews can last, you know, 5 minutes to an hour. But that hour is a conversation that I have with a candidate, and it ebbs and flows, and there's really important things to talk about that come out of that. But there's also things that are not necessarily that relevant, you know, a story about their life somewhere or a piece of the career that's not relevant to the customers that I'm supporting. So when I got the interview notes back from the AI tool, there are several pages of notes, and it actually took me longer to go through those notes, figure out where the nuggets were, edit those out, and create a good series of notes for a customer. So therein lies this, you know, that's a great example of, you know, on paper, it looks great. You know, I don't have to take any notes and I can provide a summary, but it doesn't work yet. It doesn't know what's critical to that process that I've covered. So for me, does it help me write the final summary? Yes, I use an AI tool to help me write the final summary, but I create the summary. I create the nuggets of value that come from the interview. I take and steer the interview process in the direction that I need it to understand what the candidate's fit will be like for the organization. So that's just one example of, you know, over time, will we learn how to use some of these tools better? Yes, but I think this is a situation of, you know, being better trained on tools, not ripping and replacing talent.
You know, you just reminded me, because I always talk on this channel, is that you have to keep the human in the front of any process that you do. And you got to get them involved in the process, in any process. You cannot just, you know, people can't be lazy to a point where they deploy, sorry to use the word lazy, because some of them are, deploy a process, a tech stack, and they say, okay, I'm going to press a button on one end, it's going to come out on the other end, and I'm just going to go to Starbucks and have my macchiato. It just doesn't work that way. In a business environment, we still today, even with all the advancement we have, and there's plenty of advancement, we still need to be involved to a point where we deploy the tech stack, we manage the tech stack, and we involve the human in every step of the process. Now, some places you're probably going to say, well, this is good enough and I don't need a human for this specific step, but I need the guidance, the overall guidance, to be controlled by professionals. And in any job, I mean, the service industry or the service-based industry or the economy that is based on service industry, and it's highly impacted by AI. I mean, obviously, AI is impacting every industry, but service-based economy is impacting AI. And I did a huge podcast on this particular topic. It doesn't matter where you are in the service-based economy. You are faced with, how do I deploy AI? What is AI going to help me with? What is absolutely not kind of an environment? And you have to make those decisions. It rests, and you confirmed that a second ago, it rests your reputation as a company, your success as a company or as an individual, rests on deploying these steps carefully in the right step. Otherwise, you risk a bunch of things. You risk bad reputation, you risk, you know, bad customer relationship, you risk bad market perception, et cetera. So these things are meant to help you, not to undermine you as a business, right? So based on this, like, sorry, go ahead.
And our customers are all often now asking us, are we using AI? Are we not using AI?
In which context? Do they ask you this in a bad thing, or you ask you this like, oh, I'm just curious?
Yeah, it's a curious, like, you know, we use it to do this. Do you use it? What do you think of it? Our opinions of it. Comes off, those questions come off. And I think the wrong answer is no, we're not, we don't use AI. It's not helpful. That's not the right answer. The right answer is
who is not using AI? Everybody's using AI now.
Yeah. And of course we'll use AI if it brings value to you. And you know, you pay us to handle your recruitment assignments. So you pay us to know what's the best way to do that. And we're literally learning every day. But we can rest assured that's what we focus on. It's refocused on recruiting. And so if an AI tool is valuable to the process and valuable to my customer, you can bet we'll adopt it quickly. But not if it's not. And yeah, so right. That's how we respond. We're testing all the time. And by the way, if we find a different applicant tracking system, a different calendaring system, a different texting tool, a different, you know, any piece of our software is continually being evaluated, just mm-hmm. like AI is.
Now, EA, and I think we talked about this one before, but I'm going to bring it up again because I posted about it on LinkedIn. You know that all the candidates, for instance, or somebody who's seeking a change in their career or change in jobs, or they're looking for jobs, or whatever, they're using now AI to update their CVs, update their LinkedIn profile, update their, you know, their presence, the electronic presence out there on the internet. How are you taking that into consideration? Like, you probably know that these guys are, you know, these individuals did not write it themselves. And if you give them like a writing test, may not match what they're actually on their profiles. Are you taking that into consideration, or how are you dealing with all that?
So we don't do writing tests. That's not.
I know. I'm just joking about that one.
Yeah, no, but no, we do technical tests, and we have a piece of software that actually does technical testing for our customers. So we have tools that test candidates. We do, but you know that you bring up an interesting point there. Like, you know, the number of times I talk to people that say, you know, I've applied to 50 jobs and I haven't found a job, and I think, you know, there's no way that, you know, as I described it, I think in our last podcast, you know, swiping right and swiping left on job profiles. And, you know, if I'm talking to someone and I'm suggesting, you know, ways they could find a new job, a new career, I would never suggest, okay, use a tool to write your resume, use a tool that goes to the corporate website, picks out keywords and puts it in your resume, and then swipe right and send the resume to the customer or the candidate. Our model isn't that. Our model won't find those people. And our customers don't want those people. Our model is we're going to find the people that research that corporate customer, that find out the value that they have and what the strategy is, and read the stories about the C-level suite. And then become opinionated about that opportunity, and then sit down and write a resume that is directly applicable to what that corporation wants and is looking for, and involves their whole story of, I'm aligned with this, I think this has got value, I bring this cultural fit to the opportunity. So, to back your point, if you're using AI because you're lazy and you just don't want to take the time, then you're probably going to apply to 50 jobs and not find one. But I think you can set yourself apart by really, truly abandoning that strategy and going after the one that I think really matters. And that's, you know, researching, you know, finding fit and writing about that fit. And I think that's not an AI bot.
Yeah, yeah. You know, from what I'm hearing you say, because you're marketing to the candidate, normally, when somebody is looking for a job, they're going looking for a job. So you don't need to market for them. They probably find you. And the fact that you're marketing to them, that means you're marketing to a candidate, if I can conclude that. I'm not sure, correct me if I'm wrong. You market to a candidate who is not looking for a job. You market to a candidate who is successful in their career where they are. And you're just trying to peel them from that and bring them to a, and the reason they're successful, the reason they're there, because, you know, in this day and age, they haven't been let go or changed or whatever the case may be, or they're not looking for a job.
Sure.
Is that what I'm hearing you saying? Or not necessarily.
I would say 80% of the candidate flow comes from marketing. Like, we have direct marketing campaigns. So we look at the requirements and then we hunt for people that where they live, where they work, and where they play that fit those requirements. And then we direct market to them. So I would say 80% plus aren't shopping, but, we're tapping them on the shoulder, so to speak, and saying, you should look at this opportunity because we think you align with it.
So on this, speaking of sourcing, because you mentioned you market to these individuals, is that like you use like a multi-channel strategy? Is it like LinkedIn, GitHub, you know, where the alumni lists are? What kind of sourcing mechanism you have?
So there's a number of ways we do that. And obviously the social channels that are, you know, the LinkedIn, the Instagrams, the Facebooks are where we reach out to candidates. But I think I spoke to you about this maybe the last time, but we have this delivered service. We call it the hub. So in organizations that we work for, we leverage the candidates, the companies, the candidates of the company we're working for. We leverage the employees of the company that we're working for, and we leverage those employees' networks. We leverage the partners of the companies, potential customers of those companies. And what we do is we create a network of people and we start to communicate to them using, again, another piece of our software stack that basically says, you know, XYZ company is growing and we'd like to tell you a little bit about it. And so we send that to all those people and there's an opting in process and they opt in if they want to. And basically what they have to do is share the information on a number of channels. We ask them to share. And then their networks, that amplifies that message to their network. So if you think of even, I'll use LinkedIn as an example. LinkedIn says that the average number of connections each person has is a little over 2,000. So if you had 100 employees and every employee had a LinkedIn profile and they shared that, you can do the math, but the amplification of that is significant. And you would suggest that every employee's culture, fit, alignment, a lot of their network probably thinks similarly to what those employees do. So we build out that network amplification and we send jobs out through that. And that's one of our largest ways to kind of amplify the message, create the jobs awareness to literally thousands and thousands of people, just using the employee base, the customer partners, the investors, that community, very successful. And that's one of the major ways we entice people to opportunities.
How do you determine success, CI?
Well, success is that the top of funnel candidate flow never stops. We have lots of candidates to choose from. And ultimately, our customers hire people that they're happy with and they stay a long time. And they stay a long time because they're aligned with what the corporation wants to do.
And the retention rate by your customers?
We don't measure it, but our customers always come back to us and continue with us for years. So my guess is that they're happy with that retention rate, but we don't follow it.
Okay, so you mean it's not a revolving door, obviously. Otherwise, they wouldn't come back to you.
So obviously, right, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, on the screening part, is it manual or do you use some technology like to do some resume parsing, skill extraction, that kind of thing? Do you do that manually or?
No, we part of some of our stack will screen out certain people. We call them knockout questions. So in certain situations, you know, people with visas, people that aren't like, you know, we have customers that need security clearance, those kind of things. So we have knockout questions at the front end of the process that people that can't meet those stringent requirements are knocked out. But no, predominantly we actually go through that candidate list. We have teams of people that go through that candidate list and sift through them. Yes.
And just for my own information, you know, I know you told me you operate in Europe and you've got a few customers that they're not Canadian based, but majorly you are here in Canada. Do you worry about any of the regulations between us and Europe or that doesn't bother you? Like around data protection?
Our European experience is with Canadian customers that have European footprints. So Right. And we do a lot of work. Our largest customers in the US. So we do a lot of work in North America as well. But no, that hasn't seemed to be an issue to date.
And what about fairness, biases, and all that stuff? Do you leave that to the employer, or you filter some of that at the front end?
No, you know, what we're trying to do in the front end of this process is judge fit. Well, that's requirements, specific requirements. You know, if it's an engineering role, it's software that they have to have had experience doing. In marketing, it's marketing experience, it's years of experience, it's in a sort of marketplace. Those are all things we test for, because sometimes the resumes aren't as clear as they maybe should be, or resumes aren't necessarily written for individual opportunities. So we have to dive deep into some of those. And that's part of the other reason we need people to help do that, because we don't want to throw out a strong candidate just because it's not necessarily as clear as it should be when you read the resume. And at the end of the day, we're passing on people that we think fit the organization, align with it, are interested in it, and ultimately have the requirements. So I don't see those as being issues at all.
Yeah. And since you are in the business, I have to ask you the question in the audience pretty much. I've been getting like a lot of calls from people looking for jobs, et cetera, in various capacities. And I needed to ask you this question. Like, where is the job market in Canada right now? Is it a buyer's market, seller's market? I don't want to use that same comparison, but now, I mean, is it the employer's market, or is it the employee market? What do you think your assessment is?
Well, you know what? We haven't seen a change in our our requirements. In other words, we're not seeing less customers or less job opportunities. We still have customers that are struggling to find really good people. So you read all kinds of things, Robin. You read about the youth unemployment, you read about unemployment in general. But, you know, my firsthand experience is that our customers are always challenged with finding really good people that want to work in the culture they've built. And that's not easy to find. And you don't find it by just passing the resume through a job posting. And so they like our process because we bring those types of candidates to them. So in our world, our customers struggle to find the fit candidates. And they think it's critically important enough to, you know, to spend money on that. And Pivot and Edge does that for them. So, I mean, I'm sure there are industries where people don't care about that, or customers, companies that don't care about those kind of cultural issues, but those aren't our customers. And so from our perspective, you know, the market has not really changed that much.
And in your world, the recruiting world in Canada, is that I need to get this out, I guess, from a big industry recruiting in Canada. Is how big is it? I mean, that's a general information, I guess, for the audience, but.
Yeah, I don't know. What's interesting is we don't know anybody that does it the way we do it. We've never bumped into a competitor in this space. Recruiting traditionally is done, you know, completely differently the way we did. This whole marketing first approach to hiring is just very unique. But there are lots of headhunters. There are lots of recruiting companies out there, but we seem to be alone in this approach. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that's not. Certainly from our perspective, it requires us to educate before we sell.
That's what I was going to say. You probably need to do a lot of education.
You do need a lot of education, but therein lies the fun when you think about it. You know, how boring is it just to sell something somebody else does cheaper or faster? I'd rather sell something that's unique, different, value added, and really helpful. And that's what we are. And I look forward to customer meetings because there's
always
an
eye for hour or two. You like to tell the story,
yeah, well, I do like to tell it. I do like to tell it. I say that often to the team that, just get us that meeting and we'll have a new customer. And that is pretty much true.
Can I ask you your close rate on those meetings? Is it almost 100%?
Yeah, it is actually, yeah.
Well, good for you. Yep. And this is an example when somebody's passionate about what they do and they believe in what they do. You know, I've always been asked that question, like, what's your close rate? And when I was employed by the corporation that I just left, I can remember like my close rate after a business meeting or after a customer meeting. And I can tell you, like, I'm in the 90%. Why? Mm. Is because when I walk into those meetings, I know what I'm passionate about. I know how to articulate what I'm passionate about. And it to a point where you become a believer, as you were mentioning earlier, right? You become an evangelist of the product and services. You're not selling at that point. You're just speaking from the heart. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I founded Pivot and Edge because of that. Mm-hmm. I believed that there was truly a better way of doing it. And, you know, a great example of that is I attended a social event about a week ago. Thank you very much for the invite. And I was constantly surrounded by people that were saying to me, that's really innovative. I've never heard of that way before. That's very interesting. So those are quick summaries of conversations that I had that would suggest that if they had a recruiting challenge, they'd be calling.
Yeah. And I want to thank you for attending that event, by the way. It was very successful. Shared a few pictures out there on LinkedIn, but there's a new one coming up on December 11th, and I'm calling it the Christmas edition. Make sure you get some Christmas trinkets. I don't know, a hat or a sweater, whatever. And would love to have you with us. And for the audience, that's taking place on December 11th at 6:30 and the information will be shared on LinkedIn. Feel free to register. Seating is limited. Christmas is a busy time of year and everybody will be attending this one. I think based on the feedback that I got back from UEA and from other people that attended the October 23rd event, I think it went well. I am very happy with the results and we're going to try it again.
It'd be great.
Yeah.
Robin, I want to say that I think this whole conversation about AI, it needs to be opened up. And I think, that was a main topic of conversation the other night, by the way, like everybody was talking about it, but I'd really like more people to talk about it in terms of the value that it brings, as opposed to it saved me. You know, I just saw an announcement. What was it? It was we're going to save 14,000 jobs. We're going to launch. Yep. Yeah. And I don't think that's the right way to approach that. So what are we getting that we didn't get before? What's more effective? What's quicker for me? What's more value that you're going to provide? And if that's the approach you're taking and you still can do that, well, that's wonderful for you, I guess.
100%.
But I'd like to have many more conversations about AI and its value. And of course, it's going to have more value over time, right? These tools are going to get way better.
100%.
You know, and when they do, let's have that conversation again.
But we can't have these deployment based on a promise. We can't deploy it based on a promise. We have to deploy it based on reality now.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Right. And I think, and I say be careful with that and just start to look at the tool set as a tool set, not, you know, the savior, and use it where you need to. And when it brings value, and don't when it doesn't.
And because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what business you're in, and especially in your case, if we're doing this comparison between you and the rest of the world using AI platforms, everybody's equal. Everybody uses AI platforms. Everybody uses the same tools, or pretty much the same tools. Where you are going to make a difference, where every one of us is going to make a difference, is the professionalism, the history, the business model that you bring in, the way you interact with the community around you, be it your customer, your market, et cetera. And AI is going to take a long time before they get there. Yes, you can deploy AI in a variety of small, menial tasks to help you out, note-taking, et cetera. But you got to be stay in charge and figure out where is the value being added. Alternatively, you're handing your competitors and your customers a big excuse not to use you.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, you know, if I was the customer and I was, I don't know, looking for, you know, my chief marketing officer, the last thing I do is put a bot in between that candidate and me making a decision. I know I want to make that decision. I want to spend the time with that individual. I don't want a software tool doing it on my behalf.
Yeah. The reasoning part is very sketchy at this point. the reasoning part and the decision-making part of AI is really sketchy right now.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is where people are going wrong with that one.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Absolutely.
But it's conversation everywhere, that's for darn sure.
I mean, the more we talk about it, the more it's going to sink, right? The more we talk about it, the more it's going to sink. I mean, you mentioned earlier, like we continue to talk about it because it's not going to solve itself. Human needs to continue to talk about it. People need to continue to talk about it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm glad you invited me to do this. It's the beginning of a conversation. And of course, we're going to take that. You know, I have a number of customer meetings that I have and they're all asking. So, you know, be interesting to hear what they think of my perspective. Some I haven't had a chance to actually have face-to-faces in this topic area. But yeah, even social settings, people ask. So yeah, let's, I think if you had this same podcast a year from now, maybe we both have a different perspective, but I think it would be helpful to have it as everything matures.
Absolutely. So what, and just to wrap it up, what would you like the engagement to be with Pivot and Edge from our audience, from the listeners, from the people who reads the blog and posts, blog posts about this podcast?
Well, you know, go to our website, pivotandedge.com. You know, there's submit a form if you're interested. Certainly look me up on LinkedIn. That's EA Clark. And I suspect maybe one of the only few EA Clarks on LinkedIn, but you'll find me there. Certainly send me a note. I'd love to have a conversation with you, whether that's you're building internal recruiting tools as a corporate offering or you're looking to hire hire people that fit culturally. I really enjoy having a conversation with you about our services and, you know, things like AI and operational tools that can use. We'd be glad to have any of those conversations.
Great. EA, I want to thank you so much for being part of this conversation. Thanks for coming in. I truly enjoy talking to you and I enjoy listening to your story about Pivot and Edge. And I see the passion come through the conversation when I talk to you. And I love that because you can't fake these things. It has to come out. And I really love the opportunity that we have today to talk to each other and to expand on the conversations that we've had in the other podcast and the conversation that we did face-to-face during the event in Toronto. And to the audience, I want to thank you so much for listening in, for taking part of this conversation. Again, that's a personal effort. The Localization Fireside Chat is a personal effort. So I really appreciate it if you can like, comment, and share the content with your network. I really appreciate it. And if you have any ideas or suggestions for future topic, please bring them to my attention by hitting me on LinkedIn or sending me an email. You can never miss me on LinkedIn, Robin Ayoub, and you can find me in any social media platforms. Thanks so much for everybody. EA, before we wrap it up, any last comments?
No, I just, again, appreciate you finding some time to talk about these things, Robin. And, you know, there'll be lots of other opportunities. And let's not just use podcast to chat. I'd be glad
Absolutely.
To talk anytime.
We'll meet face to face. Thanks so much, everybody. I'll see you at the next one. Thank you.